Book of Matthew, chapter 15. Book of Matthew, chapter 15. I'd like to begin reading with verse 21, read through the end of the chapter. Then Jesus went thence and departed into the coasts of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a woman of Canaan came out of the same coast, and cried unto him, saying, Have mercy on me, O Lord, thou son of David. My daughter is grievously vexed with a devil. But he answered her not a word. His disciples came and besought him, saying, Send her away, for she crieth after us. But he answered and said, I am not sent, but unto the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Then came she and worshipped him, saying, Lord, help me. But he answered and said, It is not meet or fit to take the children's bread and cast it to dogs. And she said, Truth, Lord, yet the dogs eat of the crumbs which fall from the master's table. Then Jesus answered and said unto her, Woman, great is thy faith. Be it unto thee even as thou wilt. And her daughter was made whole from that very hour. And Jesus departed from thence and came nigh unto the Sea of Galilee, and went up into a mountain, and sat down there. And great multitudes came unto him, having with them those that were lame, blind, dumb, maimed, and many others, and cast them down at Jesus' feet, and he healed them. Insomuch that the multitude wondered, when they saw the dumb to speak, the maimed to be whole, the lame to walk, and the blind to see. And they glorified the God of Israel. Then Jesus called his disciples unto him and said, I have compassion on the multitude because they continue with me now 3 days and have nothing to eat. And I will not send them away fasting, lest they faint in the way. And his disciples say unto him, Whence should we have so much bread in the wilderness as to fill so great a multitude? And Jesus said unto them, How many loaves have ye? And they said, 7 and a few fishes. And he commanded the multitude to sit down on the ground, and he took the 7 loaves and the fishes and gave thanks and brake them and gave to his disciples and the disciples to the multitude. And they did all eat and were filled. And they took up of the broken meat that was left 7 basketfuls. And they that did eat were 4,000 men beside women and children. And he sent away the multitude and took ship and came unto the coast of Magdala. What we read here is also recorded by Mark in chapter 7, verses 24 through 37. By way of background, Jesus had just fed over 5,000 with 5 loaves and 2 fishes. He passed over after he did that into the land of Gennesaret. We see that in Matthew 14:34. And there he healed many, and we read of that in Matthew 14, verses 35 and 36. And he also rebuked the Pharisees. And that's covered there in Matthew 15, verses 1 through 20. And then in verse 21, he leaves Gennesaret with his disciples. And he travels about 50 miles to the coasts of Tyre and Sidon, 2 principal cities of Canaan, Gentiles. To the Jews, Canaan meant only one thing, enemies. But that's where Jesus is now, with his disciples. And it's here that we read of this woman coming to Christ, verse 22, and behold, a woman of Canaan came. Behold. It's something amazing that she came. Mark tells us in his account that the woman was a Greek, that is a Gentile, Syrophoenician by nation, in other words, a Syrian of Phoenicia. Unknown to the disciples, the reason that they were in the coast of Tyre and Sidon was simply for this woman. Jesus had come to the coast of Tyre and Sidon for this particular woman and her daughter. We ought to thank God every day that Jesus came to our place and that He continues to come to our place. We read of what took place there in the coast of Tyre and Sidon, verses 22 through 28, which resulted in the eventual healing of this woman's demon-possessed daughter. Jesus would then leave there after the daughter was healed. That's the reason He was there. He would leave. And we see this in verse 29. And Jesus departed from thence. And He came nigh unto the Sea of Galilee. And He went up into a mountain. I don't believe He climbed the mountain, but He's in an elevated place on this mountain. And it tells us that He sat down. And the reason He's there is because there would be great multitudes that would come to Him. Again, Jesus had come to their place. And we read of what took place in verses 30 through verse 39. There was a mass healing, and there was a miraculous provision of their needs. So in this passage, we see Jesus in two places, coast of Tyre and Sidon, also near the Sea of Galilee in a mountain. And in both places, there were people who came to Him. And in both places, Jesus performed the miraculous for those who came. For those who came. And that is our subject, the blessing of coming to Jesus. The blessing of coming to Jesus. First of all, we see Jesus in these two places. Places of great need. In verse 21, Jesus again arrives in the coast of Tyre and Sidon. Verse 29, He arrives near the Sea of Galilee and went up into a mountain and sat down there. In both cases, Jesus is there. Jesus is in Tyre and Sidon. He's there. Jesus is near the Sea of Galilee upon a specific mountain. And wherever Jesus is, He is. That is, whoever He is wherever He is. We know that, we read in verse 21, Jesus went into the coast of Tyre and Sidon. Verse 29, Jesus came into the Sea of Galilee, went up upon a mountain, sat down there. In both places, He is God in the flesh. In both places, He's the Almighty One. In both places, He's the Eternal One, the Immutable One, the Infinite One. He is who He is, wherever He is. In both places, He is the Savior, He is the Redeemer, He's the Shepherd, He's the Friend of sinners. In both places, He is God's provision. Wherever Jesus goes, He is God. Wherever Jesus goes, He is God's provision. He is God's remedy. He is God's solution. So you ought to thank God that He comes to your place. And that's what we have here. Jesus is in the coast of Tyre and Sidon. Jesus is near the Sea of Galilee upon a mountain. In both places, He's greater than whatever else is there. Whatever else is there, He's greater than. Whatever's going on in your life, when Jesus comes to your place, He's greater than whatever is going on in your life. All your so-called insurmountable problems and needs, Jesus comes and He's greater than any need that there is. So Jesus, He walks through the coast of Tyre and Sidon. As He sits upon that mountain near the Sea of Galilee, there is no condition that He is not sufficient for. There is no situation, there is no circumstance that He is not sufficient for. There is no problem, there is no difficulty, there is no trial, there is no disease that He is not sufficient for, wherever He is. whether in the coast of Tyre and Sidon, or whether upon a mountain near the Sea of Galilee. He is the one who can. And whenever Jesus comes into your place, He is the one who can. He is the one who can impact your life. He is the one who can alter. He is the one who can absolutely transform everything that's going on in your life. He can impact, He can alter, He can transform death and darkness and hurt and hopelessness, and on and on and on we can go. So as Jesus walks the coast of Tyre and Sidon, or as Jesus sits in that mountain, He is the one who can. He is the one who can. He is the one who can put the pieces back together. He did so for the Syrophoenician woman and her daughter. He is the one who can put live, broken lives back together. Well over 4,000 people bring the maimed and the blind and the deaf. He put their lives back together. Wherever Jesus is, He is the one who can. And He is the one who has whatever you need. He's the one who has life. He is the one who has the salvation and the refreshment and the healing and the hope and the strength and the comfort and the relief and the victory that you need. Wherever He goes, wherever you find Jesus, He can and He has. He has what you need. So when Jesus comes to your place, He can. Doesn't matter what's going on in your life. He can. And He has. Regardless of what is going on, that's not the issue. Jesus is there. And He has what you need. He is the one who's able to mend. He is the one who's able to cure. He is the one who can. So we see Him in these two places. The coast of Tyre and Sidon. And also upon a mountain. And there He sits. And in both cases we read of a people that came to Him. Jesus is here. Jesus is here. Knowing that, you need to come to Him. That's what happened in the coast of Tyre and Sidon. It's what happened upon that mountain. So in both the coast of Tyre and Sidon, or Jesus sitting upon a mountain near the Sea of Galilee, we read of a people who came to Him. Jesus was there. The people came. That means He was approachable. Jesus is here. And He is approachable. You can approach Him. Doesn't matter what your need is. It doesn't matter what your condition is. It doesn't matter what your situation is. The main thing is this. Jesus is here. And He's approachable. He's available. In both places, Tyre and Sidon and that mountain, there was a needy and desperate people who were attracted because of their need to Christ. And they were drawn to Him. And in order to come to Him, they had to leave where they were and come to Jesus. And therein lies the problem. Most are not willing to leave where they are. Even if their situation is horrific, they will stay there rather than leave and come to Jesus, who has what they need. So they came to Jesus. They left where they were. And they came to Him. Now in our text in verse 21, Jesus arrives at the coast of Tyre and Sidon, and we read of this woman. And notice what it says in verse 22, came out of the same coast. So she's left where she was and cried unto him. So she's come to him saying, have mercy on me, O Lord, thou son of David. My daughter is grievously vexed with a devil. Mark tells us in Mark 7:25 that a certain woman whose young daughter had an unclean spirit heard of him. She heard that Jesus was now in the coast of Tyre and Sidon. This woman, who had an enormous problem, a very pressing need, a very present difficulty, this woman who's hurting because her daughter is suffering, this woman is in a state of great distress. Sorrow fills her heart. And there's anguish and torment. But one day she heard that Jesus had arrived. So what did she do? She came. She came to him. She came with her overwhelming burden. But she came believing. She came believing that he is Lord. Notice what it says there in verse 22. O Lord. O Lord. She believes this is not an ordinary man. He's Lord. And she cries, my daughter. My daughter. My daughter. And you can just hear the heartache in those two words. My daughter is presently, right now, grievously vexed, tormented. My daughter right now is living in torment because of a demon. Mark says in chapter 7, verse 26, that she besought him. She came. And she wept. She sobbed. She begged. She begged the Lord. She pleaded with Christ on behalf of her daughter. That's something that seems to be lost today. Crying unto God on behalf of others. People talk about how burdened they are, but they don't take their burdens to the right person most of the time. From her plea in verse 22, she believed that he was able to meet her need. No doubt she said to herself, here is the one. Here is the one who can heal my daughter. Here is the one who can take away her pain and her anguish. He's the one. He's the only one. I'm going to go to him. That makes sense. If you believe that he's the only one that can rectify the situation, you have lost your mind if you don't go to him. She came. She believed that she was undeserving and that he was merciful because she said, have mercy on me. She didn't come pleading merit. She knew that she didn't deserve anything from his hand. She is depending on his person. He's merciful. She believed she was the inferior one. He is the Lord. He was the promised Messiah. She said, O Lord, thou son of David. That is a declaration that she believes he's the God sent one. He's the God sent Messiah. So she came. So desperately. desperately, wanting her daughter healed. She left wherever she was. No doubt she left her house where probably her daughter was. So desperately wanting her daughter healed. So desperately wanting that demon gone from her daughter. She longs for relief. She longs for release for her daughter and herself. And she pleaded with a sense of urgency to the only one who could. That needs to be us. She came presenting her need. She said, "My daughter is grievously vexed with a devil." She's presenting her need to the only one who can. We all have needs. We all know people that have needs. But do we plead? Do we weep? Do we sob? Oh Lord, fix it. Fix it. But notice verse 23. She's pleading, but he answered her not a word. She had heard that Jesus could do the miraculous, that Jesus could do the impossible. But when she came to him and presented her need and pleaded, he answered her not a word. Did she throw up her hands and say, "What's the use? Everything that I've heard is lies"? No, she knew. He's the one. He's the one. She had heard of his love. She had heard of his compassion upon needy souls. Yet when she comes to him and presents her need to him, he answered her not a word. This would be a great test to her faith in him. You know how many times people have said to me, "Brother Dan, I've prayed all week and nothing has happened." 1 week? Pray all your life. And what they're saying is, "I'm just going to give up." He's the only one you can go to. You don't have anywhere else to go. You better just keep going to him. There is no other alternative. It's him. And you just keep pleading. He answered her not a word. Yet she continued to plead. She continued to plead so much so that she became an annoyance to the disciples. The disciples said, "Lord, send her away. She's bugging us. She's driving us crazy. She won't shut up. Just send her away." And in spite of Christ's apparent apathy and rejection, in spite of Christ's silence, in spite of the discouraging words of the apostles, in spite of her apparent disqualification, there in verse 24, we read in verse 25, "Then came she." In other words, she drew even closer. You pray and you pray and you pray, and the Lord doesn't seem to answer. What are you to do? Draw closer. The answer is not quitting. The answer is not going somewhere else. The answer is to draw closer to him and continue to plead, because he is the only one. She came and worshiped him, saying, "Lord, help me. Lord, help me." Jesus had just called her a dog. And she keeps pleading, "Lord, help me. Lord, I need your help." She was tired of seeing her daughter grievously vexed by a devil. So she kept pleading. She so desperately wanted her daughter to be healed and the demon to be gone. So she keeps pleading. Verse 29, Jesus departed from thence. That is the coast of Tyre and Sidon, came near the Sea of Galilee. Mark, in his account, tells us that he passed through the cities of Decapolis, which is the region of 10 Greek cities. And arriving at that mountain, he sits in an elevated place upon that mountain. Why is he there? He's there for the multitudes that would be coming. Again, thank God when he comes to your place. In verse 30, we are told, great multitudes came unto him. Great multitudes came. From what follows, this multitude would have been well over 4,000 people. They came. They have left wherever they were, and they came unto him. They came unto him. And notice, having with them those that were lame, blind, dumb, maimed, and many others. Look at that scene. Picture that scene. A multitude of well over 4,000 people. And in that multitude, there are people who could not stand or walk. And in that multitude, there are those who lived in the darkness of blindness. There were those who were deaf. There were those who could not speak. There were those who had permanently damaged limbs. And then it says, many others. In other words, the demon possessed, the lepers, the diseased. All the stories that could be told in that group of people. Perhaps some were born with sight and they became blind. Perhaps some were born with healthy limbs and they became maimed. But oh, they all had a story to tell. And their needs were desperate. Their lives were wrecked. And there's Jesus, God in the flesh. And he came. And he has. So they came. They came unto him. And they arrive at that mountain where Jesus is. And though we do not know how far up in the mountain he is, I'm sure it's not very far. But he is in an elevated place. And we read in verse 30 that they cast these blind and lame down at Jesus' feet. So they have to climb to where he was. That's no easy task. If you're carrying someone, that's no easy task if you have someone leaning upon you. But there was Jesus, and he can, and he has what these people need. So they come. They come. Some are carrying individuals to where Jesus is. Others are leading the blind along. Some are ascending with the maimed leaning upon them. But in spite of all the difficulties, in spite of all the struggles, there's Jesus, and he can, and he has what I need. And they just keep on moving in the direction of Christ. Because they knew that Jesus was able to meet their needs. So in both cases, Tyre and Sidon, the mountain, there's a people with desperate and urgent needs, far, far beyond the abilities and the resources of man. Everywhere we look, there are people with desperate needs, far above the resources and the abilities of man. Need to come to Jesus. And these people were very much aware of their need. And they felt acutely their need and the impossibility of their situation. And believing that Jesus is greater than their need and able to meet their need, they come. They come. If we don't come, it says one of two things. Either we don't believe that He can fix. And if we say we do believe and don't come, then we're just plain ignorant. Again, I mean, how insane does one have to be? Your life's a wreck, someone else's life's a wreck, there's the only one who can fix it, and you go somewhere else. That doesn't make sense. So either way, if you don't believe, or if you say you believe and don't come, I don't know which is worse. But notice what Jesus did in both cases. The Syrophoenician woman, overwhelmed with sorrow, misery, and hurt. Overcome with a sense of helplessness, came to Jesus with what was beyond human ability. Her daughter is vexed by a demon. A lot of people vexed with demons today. This woman comes with a weighted down and broken heart. And she states her problem. My daughter is grievously vexed with a devil. Mark tells us that she fell at Jesus' feet. So we need to see her there at Jesus' feet. And she's pleading. Lord, help me. Lord, help me. And notice verse 28. Then Jesus answered and said unto her, oh, how wonderful. Remember, He answered her not a word. But now He speaks. Now He speaks. O woman, great is thy faith. Be it unto thee even as thou wilt. And her daughter was made whole from that hour. Jesus brought about a complete and instant cure. Mark says in Mark 7:29, Jesus said unto this woman, go thy way. And then there's wonderful words. The devil is gone out of thy daughter. The devil is gone out of thy daughter. And oh, what joy filled her heart. The devil is gone. The devil is gone out of thy daughter. She who was so sorely vexed, He's gone. He no longer vexes her. All because of Jesus. Oh, I imagine she went home with great joy. Jesus would then leave the coast of Tyre and Sidon and goes and sits down upon a mountain near the Sea of Galilee. A multitude of well over 4,000 people come, bringing with them the lame and the blind and the dumb and the maimed and many others. What a scene. What a scene. As you look at the mass of people, you see the wrecked lives. We will wreck our life. We're good at that. Not only will we wreck ours, we'll wreck someone else's too. Most people that wreck their lives aren't content in wrecking their own. They want to wreck someone else's also. Wreck lives everywhere. And Jesus is the only one who can fix them. Desperate need. In verse 30, we see that these that are lame, blind, dumb, maimed, again are brought to the feet of Jesus. And then we read, and he healed them. And he healed them. Now, from Mark's account, we looked at this in Sunday school. He focuses upon one individual in that multitude, revealing that this was not just a mass healing. In other words, Jesus didn't just look on that multitude and say, "You're all healed." But he dealt with them individually. It was a mass healing, but it was individual. It was individual. He healed them individually. And we read those words, he healed them. And those who now could stand and walk, they could say, he healed me. And those that were blind who now could see could say, he healed me. And those who were deaf and now could hear, they also could point to Jesus and say, he healed me. So read those words, he healed them. He healed them. But realize it's personal. Each one of those individuals could say, he healed me. Oh, what love, what grace, what mercy, what kindness, what goodness that the Lord would heal these individuals. And again, we don't know how high elevated Jesus was. But it says he went up into the mountain. He was elevated. And no doubt it was a struggle for many of these to get to the feet of Jesus. But it wasn't no struggle getting down, because he healed them. The struggle was over. He healed them. We read in verse 32 of our text that this multitude that brought all these blind and lame, and also the blind and the lame, they continued with Jesus for 3 days. For 3 days. Perhaps it took 3 days to do all the healing. I don't know. But they were there for 3 days. Jesus looks upon them with compassion. And he says, they have nothing to eat. They have nothing to eat. Focus upon that word, nothing. 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 They have nothing. That's true today of the lost sinner. They have nothing. They have nothing. Jesus has compassion. He says, I will not send them away fasting. I will not send them away hungry. And he states why? Because they will faint in the way. More harm will come to them. Disciples immediately in verse 33 see an insurmountable problem. Lord, how in the world are we going to feed these people? That's just like us. In verse 34, Jesus asked them a question. How many loaves have you? They answered, 7. That would have been the answer to the question. Jesus didn't ask, how many loaves and fishes do you have? That's not what he asked. He said, how many loaves do you have? And they said, 7. But then they added, and a few little fishes. And I believe they probably put the emphasis on few and little. Jesus would proceed to feed this multitude of over 4,000 people with 7 loaves and a few fish. Their paltry means in the hand of Christ was more than enough to feed and to satisfy well over 4,000 people. And we read in verse 37, and they did all eat and were filled. Not that they just did eat. They did all eat and were filled. And then it says that there was left 7 baskets full. That's more than they began with. 7 loaves and a few little fishes. And after they all ate, there were 7 baskets full. Full. There was enough for all. And more. That's still true today. There is enough for all in Jesus Christ. And after you have received from Him, He is no less full. There's still plenty. Oh, what fullness is in Christ. And He's here. He's here. He's here. And He's approachable. You can come to Him. And this multitude came to Jesus. And they not only left with the lame and the blind and the dumb and the maimed and many others healed, but they had also been miraculously provided for. So in our text, Jesus is there. And the people come to Him with their impossible situations. And there are many impossible situations. Why in the world would you and I try to fix an impossible situation? What are you going to do? It's impossible. Is there something we don't understand about impossible? Come to the One who can do all things. They came, the Christ. Jesus was the answer. He still is. To many, that seems simplistic. It is. He's the answer. He's the answer. Many times you tell somebody Jesus is the answer and they think, well, you don't care anything about me. How in the world did you come to that conclusion? We just told you about the only one who can help you, and how does that equate to we don't care? Let's just be honest. That's not what they wanted to hear. They wanted a 3-step program. Jesus is the answer. He still is. He's who you need. Whatever your situation is today, the situation's not the issue. He's who you need. He's who you need. We lose sight of the real issues all the time. The issue is not my need. The issue is not my problem. The issue is Him. He's the one I need. Why would I waste time anywhere else? Come to Him. Come to Him. He's the restorer of that which is broken. He's the miraculous provider. He's the only one. Again, we say it all the time. Don't get angry because there's only one way. You thank God that there is one way. And there is one way. And His name is Jesus. And whoever we are today, we need to come to Him. We need to always be drawing closer to Him. 2 different places. And it doesn't matter where you go. It doesn't matter. There's problems everywhere. There's difficulties everywhere. There's needs everywhere. But there's Jesus. And he's able. And he has whatever you need. And I promise you that today. He is who you need. And he has what you need. There's no doubt in my mind about that. You say, well, Brother Dan, you don't understand. No, you don't understand. You don't understand how great this Jesus is. He's who you need. He has what you need. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse of song. Let's all stand. Brother Larry will lead us in singing.